Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the podcast that no one wants to record. Welcome to the podcast that I'm surprised that any of you are listening to. Ruth, thank you for joining us in the pit of misery that we're in. The podcast of doom is very much back, I feel. How are you doing?
Well, it's Monday. It's 8 o'clock on a Monday morning, so that in itself isn't great. And I'm just like, I've just had enough. It's been a week, Dave, what with one thing and another.
Oh,
it's
my
been
God.
A week.
It
And
really
I'm sure
has.
everyone's feeling exactly that. Just
go on,
yeah.
sorry.
No, it's just it's hard to. It's really. I mean, I've obviously tried kind of explaining to friends here and colleagues here, like just like this sort of woe that's sitting in my chest. And they look at you and they nod and you know, but they haven't quite got it. Bless them, they're
No.
trying.
One of my colleagues who I share an office with came into school on Wednesday morning, and she was just like, "Oh, I saw the result, nil nil. What does that mean? Not bad." And I was just, I was just like, "Oh, fuck off." And she was like, "What? What? Is that not a good result?" And I was just like, "I can't decide if you're trying to wind me up or you genuinely don't know what happened." She was like, "I thought it finished nil nil." I was just like, "Oh, bless you." It didn't. It did finish nil nil, and then horrific things happened.
Yes.
And for those of you who listened before, I had to do a concert in school on Wednesday, and I think until about midday, I was just vile. Anytime a kid came anywhere near me, they either got their head ripped off or they got the most sarcastic response of all time. Until one kid came up and said, "Oh, how did Wales get on last night then?" I was just like, "Very good, very good." And I remembered that he's Romanian. I was just like, "Well, I'm sure you're going to have a quiet Euros yourself." And he was like, "What do you mean?" I was just like, "Surely Romania aren't going to the Euros." He was like, "Yeah, we are. We topped our group." And I was like, "Oh, good, brilliant." So now I'm annoyed and embarrassed, which is a perfect combination. I've got to say, Ruth, there's one thing I just want to say. I went to watch the game, and it just so happened to be on the same night as the Dutch were playing Germany. So in my local pub, there was about 20 or so people watching the game. And of course, Ben Davis scores, and I absolutely lose my shit. But because the commentary is on in Dutch, for the Dutch game, sorry, the Wales game was on kind of the TV in front of me and with the TV speaker. So I couldn't really hear anything that was going on. So I went absolutely mad. And everyone in the pub turned around to look to try and work out what's going on. And just as I kind of start to calm down, I look back at the screen to see the linesman there with his flag raised. And the whole bar just went, absolute bastards. I've never been happier for the Germans to score a goal in my whole life when they scored that late winner. Good, even though it was a friendly, always like the Germans. At the end of the game, I was just kind of pacing up and down, I think, in the end, and just the worst feeling I've had as a football fan, I think, ever. I think had some low nights as a Wales fan, but losing that one in the manner that we did was just dreadful.
I've been trying to think about what made it feel worse, and I think it's the fact that it's the suddenness of it. I don't think I've had anything feel quite so like instantaneous. You go from there to down here, other than maybe when Bowden skied the penalty. But even then, there was, I don't know what it was, maybe 20 minutes left in the game or something. And to be honest with what happened ultimately with the flare and the fan that passed away, that game still, that wasn't the worst thing that happened that night, you know? And I think I think what shook me most was just the way that the world just, everything just falls down around you so instantly. You can almost sort of build yourself up when your team's not been in a game and you're 1-0 down with 20 minutes to go, but you can't see how you're going to score and get back into it. You can kind of live that emotion a bit more progressively. Yeah, this was hard. This was really hard.
Why are we doing this? Okay, so let's get this shit out the way, Ruth. you're absolutely right, though. I think the worst bit for me, I think, as you say, is the instantaneousness of it. When you know, Newcastle were 2-0 down in the League Cup final, whatever, with about 10 minutes to go, you know you're not going to win that match. That you know, at 5-4 in the penalty shootout, you've still got to score, but you know, it's death or glory there. I hadn't really prepared myself for it. And I think overall, I thought we were the better side on the night, with the exception of the second half extra time. And that, I think that played its part in it as well.
Yeah.
Just that feeling of, like, I can remember as soon as it happened, people, bless them, in the bar were trying to be nice, and I was just like, "God, leave me alone! I'm gonna punch someone." And I turned around to Nikki, who's the works behind the bar, and I was just like, "Bill," and she was like, "Don't worry about it. Pay me next time." I was like, "Thank you," and just turned around, and just marched out of the pub. And Joy was watching with me, and was just like, Joy was like, "I'd taken the scarf, and I'd taken Griff the dragon cuddly toy, and I'd taken everything." She was just there, like shuffling stuff together and putting it in a bag. But the only upside was is that when we eventually got home, Joy cycled home and took the dog out for a before bed wee, and she waited for me at the end of the road for me to kind of come down the road. And as soon as she could see me, she let the dog off the lead, and I think that made me cry more than anything else, because the dog was just like, "Yeah, has no idea what's happened. He's just like, oh look, I like him," and then he just ran up to me and gave me a hug. Bless him. Let's talk about the football rather than just how shit we felt. The team selection, I don't want to go too much into this because there's so many narrow moments in these sort of circumstances which make a difference. I personally thought that the decision was right to bring more in. I think the issue became that as the game wore on, we started to go longer, less people were willing to gamble and go up and support him. And it made him look like he was having a terrible game. He got a lot of stick on social media, which I thought was, especially for how he played in the first, I don't know, 70 minutes at least, I thought was very unjustified. And okay, yeah, he wasn't great after that, but we kept him on because he's a good penalty taker. We kept him on because he's a good outlet. But if no one's running up to him, or beyond him, it doesn't matter how the hold-up play is working, really. So I thought the team selection was right. And for the most part, I think it worked, that the way he was bringing people in and creating space for other people with his movement. But, you know, overall, I don't really have any complaints.
No, and we've got to remember, he was, I mean, Ben Davies, disallowed goal aside, he was still the closest we got to scoring a goal.
Yeah,
I was happy enough with it. And I think when we learned what the situation was with David Brooks, it kind of made more sense. Again, I think a combination more with Brennan kind of makes okay, you know, that makes sense. Wilson kind of orchestrating a little bit behind them. I think it's very easy to be critical with hindsight when you haven't won a game. But if we did have ended up winning penalties 5-4, we wouldn't be thinking there was anything wrong with the selection at all. I don't think he was used perhaps as well as he was, for example, in the Croatia game, but then the whole team didn't play as well as we played in the Croatia game. So I think it's difficult to single one person out. I was happy enough with it. And I think, as I've said multiple times, generally speaking, I am happier when we play more because for the exact reason, he seems to be the best avenue we have for scoring goals consistently.
I agree. And I was having a bit of back and forth with someone on Twitter yesterday talking about the whole thing. And, you know, there's two things for me. One of them is if the score finished, if the game happens in the exact same way, it's 0-0, we lose 5-4 on penalties, the exact same people or maybe different people, whatever, would be giving out saying, oh, he should have started more and we should have got him on earlier.
Yeah.
So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't when you lose a game like that. It's always hindsight is perfect. I also think, you know, people are saying, I saw someone, and this is the person interacting with me on Twitter, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, said, you know, I'm not really sure I want to see him in a Wales shirt anymore. I was like, bloody hell. I did some stat digging yesterday. Mm-hmm. He's played 41 games for Wales now, and he scored 12 goals. Okay, that's not loads. The person I was talking to was comparing him to Mark Hughes, which I felt was a bit harsh in the first place. But he scored four fewer. Mark Hughes only scored 16 goals for Wales in 70-something appearances. So on average, it's taking Kiefer Moore a goal, a game less to score a goal on average. You know, and I'm not saying that Kiefer Moore is as good as Mark Hughes for a moment, but I also think we can't forget what has happened in the last few years. And it's not just down to one performance. Like, he was excellent against Croatia. He didn't score the goals. He didn't do anything. But the way he played that night, you know, was one of the big reasons we won. So I do also think we've got to be a little bit careful as fans of not saying the reason we've won this or lost this is because of one decision or one person who played or whatever. It's just one of those things. Can you remember much of the game? Because it seemed to pass me by in a blur. I watched some highlights yesterday, which made me feel physically sick. But
It's interesting. I remember moments. You remember the near misses. You remember Ben Davies' disallowed goal, which was, with VAR as it is now, was the right decision, but it's a ridiculous decision.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was anything inconsistent in that decision based on where we stand now with the offside rule, but it seems a stupid scenario. And then I mean, I think my biggest frustration is how little they created. It was a game we could have. I think we were more in the position that we could have won that game ultimately than they were. You know, they didn't have a shot on target in the 120 minutes. Although, as you said, they were certainly better. You got deeper into extra time, and they look perhaps more likely to the ones that would nick it with 3 minutes to go in extra time. I can't disagree with that. But really, it's not, you know, you remember the excitement of the odd free kick we got in a good place and then didn't really do anything with it. But really, I'm with you. I think there's a kind of a sort of cushioning that you do, don't you, when you don't want to relive something. It just kind of becomes a bit of a fuzz in your head. And I think the game's become a bit of a fuzz, basically.
Yeah, I think so. That's exactly how I feel about it. And I think you remember the things, that header that Moore got clawed away, yeah, and he had another good chance from a corner not long after. Mm-hmm. You know, as you say, you mentioned the free kick there. I just felt all night that we looked a Gareth Bale away from winning it. I think we lacked that spark on the night. And I think when everyone combines and does something amazing, it kind of works and it's great, you know, as we did against Finland, albeit a poorer side. And I think as the game wore on, it looked less and less likely that was going to happen. We stopped committing men forward in the same way. And you think, well, that moment's not going to come now, apart from some, you know, 40-yard wonder goal.
Fluky.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen. And then as the game wore on, it became or looked less likely we were going to score. And then it just, as we were going through extra time, I just said to Joy, this is going to penalty. No one's scoring here. No one's scoring. Mm-hmm. They had that kind of whipped chance that just whipped past the post quite late on, but that was about it really. I feel like we've got to talk a little bit about Rob Page, Ruth, because I think he's become the story in a lot of ways of Wales of the last probably year, to be perfectly honest. We'll start with an impossible question. Do you think he made the right changes on the night?
To be honest, it's difficult to judge, because I think, for example, when James came on, Dan James came on, it seemed the right decision, but then ultimately moving him to right back seems a really strange decision when you've got possibilities on the bench that could have addressed that more. Like if you'd have moved Nico across, you had Morgan Fox or Jada Silva perhaps that could have come in at left back. But having said that, I thought Daniel James did that role really well, in fairness. It's not like we were suddenly exposed down that wing and they had lots of chances. So in terms of him fulfilling that role, I think that worked fine. But it's just like, well, you've brought him on for an attacking reason. Wouldn't you rather stay with that attacking reason and have his speed causing problems upfield and go for a more conventional approach at the back, whether it was go to four or it was bring on another wing back? So that was a strange decision, but I think he was a little, I think with Brooks being ill, they obviously brought him on hoping that he could affect things for sort of like 20 minutes. And it was, you know, and I think there was talk of a hamstring pull by the end as well, him being under the weather. So obviously that all kind of snowballed into a bit of a messy situation. It did make me realize perhaps our depth that we were talking about in the previous pod isn't perhaps there in quite the way we'd hoped.
I think it's difficult to say. It's so hard, isn't it? Because I thought at the time it was actually quite an attacking move. Easiest solution is to go four at the back, play Ben Davis at left back and bring Nico to the other side. That's the most obvious thing to do. You obviously felt like it's such a tight game that by bringing off a defensive player, okay, you may give us more going forward, but it may also open us up at the back. One goal is going to win this game. If I change the defensive shape, does that alter things too much? Instead he brings on an attacking player to play as a genuine wing back. So I kind of go with that decision. I think trusting the bench argument, you know, with Fox and De Silva, I get it. And it makes perfect sense. And it's probably the right thing to do. By the same token, I know I'm being maybe just being a bit devil's advocate, but there's such fine margins here.
Yeah.
If you bring on that lad, Fox or De Silva, and it's, you know, that their first, I mean, I don't know off the top of my head, I know Fox has played in smaller games before, and I don't think De Silva has played at all before. But if you bring on that player for their first ever game in that huge cauldron of pressure and they make one slip or step, again, Paige gets hammered. Why the hell's he done that? Da, 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 da. And it's just such small margins. And I think if you make a change and you concede four goals in 4 minutes, then okay, fair enough. And I know I use a Newcastle example every week, so I'm going to stick to it this week. Jamal Lascelles got injured on the weekend. He did his knee ligaments. Newcastle put Emil Kraft at right back. Dan Byrne went to left centre back. Livramento was playing right back, went and played left back. And in the time we'd farce-arsed around and sorted ourselves out, we'd conceded a goal and we're lucky not to concede a second. And I, again, maybe there's a chance that he thought, do I really want to rejig everything also if I'm making this decision and bringing someone else on? Like, it's so hard, Ruth. And I think it's all easy in hindsight to say these things, you know?
Yeah, I to be honest, I don't think it made a huge difference because I don't think either team was committing to score at that point. And I think Dan James did the job he was asked to do, you know, further back on the right, perfectly adequately. It wasn't as though you put him there and then he was completely outclassed. He knew what he was doing. So the shape worked. If Brooks and Wilson had been managed to connect in the way that they had in the Finland game, you know, perhaps something would have come of it. I think the point perhaps is a more general, how could we have taken the game up in a way that we didn't? And I actually think both sides were just so frightened to shake the tree that it was almost always going to end up as this 0-0 or 1-1 draw, because everybody was just understandably too scared. And I think that's one of, when you talked about Bale earlier, I think that's one of the things that he had that perhaps we're missing, is just that faith to gamble and think, I'm just going to give it a damn go. Because if it went wrong, nobody was going to be pulling him up. Everybody was going to say, oh, thank God he had a go. You know, we went at them. We tried it. He had the capacity to gamble because of the nature of the player he was and the status he had as a player, that perhaps these players they're not quite there yet. And everybody's just a little bit conservative when they're in this position. And I don't blame them. I don't think that's anybody's fault. But I think Gareth had the long leash in a way that perhaps these players don't.
I agree. And, you know, we're also talking about a generational, but never mind generational, once in 100 years player that we, you know, and I think that can't be, you know, taken lightly either. The two things for me I thought I would say I would have gambled is I thought there was no need to bring Brennan Johnson off. I think if you're going to jig mm-hmm. things around, I have no problem with that. Brennan Johnson's a £50 million footballer. Yeah. He's probably our most naturally gifted player at the moment. I would have kept him on. He certainly didn't look tired at that point. Yeah. And I don't know if you saw the Spurs game on the weekend. Yesterday he came on and he really terrorised Luton, admittedly, but had a real impact on the game. I also wonder, just later in the game, if he'd have brought on Ramsey, just for like 10 minutes in extra time, to A, mm-hmm. embed him into the game a little bit, and to maybe see if he could get his foot on the ball a little bit. And then also, having been in the game for 10 minutes, that gives him a window to take a penalty. I think bringing him on for the last 30 seconds and then take a pen is harsh. And again, we you know, these guys know things we don't. Maybe Johnson was never going to take a penalty, so he thought, mm-hmm. I'm not going to sacrifice a substitute here for someone who I know is not going to take a penalty further down the line. We'll stay on the page topic.
I think that was just on that topic of Johnson. I think that was the perhaps the one decision I would question. But again, it's 2020 hindsight, isn't it? I think overall we just look like a team that had trouble doing back to back games, and we consistently look like we have trouble doing back to back games, and we run out of steam. And Poland, in fairness, were probably feeling the same, and everybody just got a bit passive.
like you say, you just don't want to lose by the end, right? I think that becomes the overriding emotion. Yeah. And I felt like as we went into extra time, then you're 5 minutes away and you think, well, now I'd almost take penalties just because it's a toss of a coin there.
Yeah.
I mean, we mentioned the Pens there. I think we have four very good Pens and one. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad pen, I don't think, but it's not a good pen. Mm-hmm. A good height, you know, not in the corner. Yeah. And on all of their pens, yeah. I think with one exception, was unsavable, really. So, I don't want to talk because I'll get upset again now, but it is just one of those things, and it's just a toss of a coin, really. It's just heartbreaking fashion to lose in that sense.
I think toss of a coin might be more important there than might be literally more important, because every drawing, every toss of the coin went for us in the lead up, getting the home advantage in both games, playing towards the Canton end in the second half, deciding which end the penalties were at. I think we won all of those. The one we didn't win was whether we were taking penalties first or second. And Lewandowski made the right decisions. You know, you're better off taking the penalty first because it puts more pressure on the second penalty taker. That's the one toss that didn't go our way. And it ultimately comes down to these minute little things. And that was part of the scenario that Dan James had to face.
Whoever, whoever decided to play the anthem just before the penalties whilst they were doing the little huddles and then letting the crowds in there, I mean, that person deserves a pay rise as far as I'm concerned. That was unbelievable. The noise, oh my God, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. I think we started about Page there, Ruth, and let's finish this little section with him. A lot of people have questioned the decision to the announcement, and I feel again like everyone is just in a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situation here. I don't think he made enough bad decisions there to say the reason we didn't lose the game was because of him. You can absolutely make the argument that we did lose because of him if you wanted to. I think it's just as easy to make the argument the other way as well. I actually thought the timing, the decision to bring out the statement was quite a good way to do it, because it stops that conversation now. You know, we finish, okay, we've got the Nations League coming up in September. There would have been months and months of clowns like you and me talking about, is he going to go? Is he going to stay? Da-da-da-da. Who else is going to come in? Blah, 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 blah. All of that's gone now. And you can be as pissed off with the decision as you like. Absolutely no problem with that. But we have to just get on with this now and recognize that he's going to be our manager. You know, for me, I said at the start when he got the job long term, I felt like it wasn't the right person long term, because I don't think he's got the pedigree or the quality that we need to be successful as a nation. But I don't think he's a bad appointment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how I still view it. I still don't think he's the right man for the job, but I still think he's not a bad appointment. He's got the player support very, very obviously. And I think, who are we to say that we know more than the players? If they think he's good enough and are going to play for him, then I think we've got to stick with that decision and back the players and back him. And he deserves another go again to us, getting us to a tournament.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that. I think just fiscally, I don't think the FAW can afford to do anything else. They've got another, you know, 2 years or so to run in the contract. And I think, you know, we've now missed out on money from the Euros. We've had that the last two rounds of Euros. That's an income we're not going to have. I think there are fiscal reasons they don't want to do it. I think there's also the question of who else. And no, you know, there isn't someone sitting out there who's desperate to do this role at the price point that the FAW. You know, are you actually getting something better than Page at the price point the FAW can afford? Probably not. I don't see any reason to be disrupting this right now. I think we're better building what we have. It might not be the most beautiful foundation imaginable, but it's there. And I feel it's better than going back to square one.
I agree. And I'm going to nail my flag to the mast here. My biggest frustration about all of this is that no one can ever answer the question, yeah, but who else? Ossian Roberts doesn't want this job. Or if he does, that ship has sailed. I don't think he wants it anymore. I think he did.
I don't think he wants it now. And
No.
I agree. Yeah.
And I think he's, you know, he's working with Como. He's going to be there till the end of the season. But I think his job at Como is he's going to be a long-term head of development for the club. That sort of development role in the way that he did with Morocco, for example, I think is where he sees himself. I think he's, you know, he's not really been a long-term manager at any sort of level, really. So I think, you know, we need to park that. That's gone. The next one, Steve Cooper. You know, I think Steve Cooper is a good manager. I think he's at the wrong time of his career for us to give him the job, in the sense that I don't think he'd want the job yet. And I think if you spoke to a lot of Swansea fans who go and watch those matches on the regular, I think you would get a slightly different argument or conversation from a lot of those people. I was speaking to a friend of mine, journalist friend of mine yesterday, who's a Swansea fan. And one of the big things he was saying was that he thinks that Cooper got away with a lot when it was COVID. There weren't fans in the stadium, and they were playing dull football, kind of grinding things out. And it wasn't exciting. He got away with it because there weren't people there. And in his words, where he thinks tactically he's a dinosaur, he'd produce some of the worst football matches I've seen at Swansea, and they were under him. He benefited from lockdown football. He could risk stinking the place out for a draw or a narrow win. I think the big difference is Cooper does have a level of quality, you know, proven quality.
Yeah.
I also wonder, in the same way we talk about Mullin, would people be talking about him so much if he wasn't Welsh or wasn't playing for a Welsh club? I would say the same argument stands for Steve Cooper. If he wasn't Welsh, would people be screaming for Steve Cooper to be the manager? I don't think they would. So I think, you know, the options, as you mentioned there, the alternatives, the price point, if you want to call it that, all those issues still remain. All those problems are still there, and I just don't see... I don't see it happening, and B, I'm not sure that these people that we're talking about here are actual alternatives.
No, I agree. I'm trying to understand what we achieve. We've got a manager who, I mean, admittedly, he only came in for the last couple of games of the last Euro qualifiers, but he got us through those two crucial games. He took us to the Euros. It wasn't great, admittedly, but we did all right.
Got out of the
in
group.
very difficult circumstances. Got out of the group, as you said. Then we qualified for the World Cup and we came a penalty away from qualifying from this. I mean, actually, as a success ratio, that's pretty impressive. And I think we've just got to be careful about the grass always being greener, Dave. I think there's a tendency to kind of jump at this point, whereas we might be actually better holding course and building from where we are.
I think the thing that keeps coming back to me every time I talk about it, other people are talking about Chris Coleman coming back. And obviously, as two people who named their podcast after a song that people sing about him, that would be a lovely moment for us. But I also think that we've got to remember that he also wasn't, you know, that Andorra game, he's a retaken free kick away from losing his job there,
exactly,
in all reality. And there were a lot of people before the start of that campaign saying, he doesn't deserve another campaign, blah, 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 blah. So we've also got to be careful we don't rewrite history with a lot of these things. We've been wrong about this stuff very recently. And, you know, and I think we've got to stick with it. I don't think there's any point beating that particular drum anymore, unless you have anything else you want to add.
Nope. Good there.
Yeah, well, there you go. We go again in the Nations League in September. And what a perfect segue to Nations League and qualifiers, which are starting up soon. Ruth, I'm going to call half time here as our meeting is not far from ending. Ladies and gents, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the Women's Nations League, which start on Friday. We are back for the second half of the podcast, which is no longer going to be doom and gloom, as we're going to look ahead to the Women's Nation League and the Euro qualifiers ultimately, which is what that is for. Before we do that, Ruth, I almost forgot that I got in touch with Mel, who we spoke to from the transplant, the Wales transplant team, a couple of weeks ago. And in the transplant games, they came third, which is very, very respectable. I know that we Wales, they ultimately were hosting this event. A team from Nottingham came first. Teams came from all over the place. Even an Irish team came across to be represented as well. So congratulations to them, first and foremost, for coming third in that tournament. But of course, do not forget that they have the World Cup coming up. If you want to support the Welsh transplant team, they have a little page, I think, is that the right way to say it, Ruth, on our website. So head to ColemanHadADream.com. You can find some more information about them there. You can listen to the podcast we recorded with them. And crucially, and most importantly, you can find a link to their GoFundMe page, where if you want to support the team, you can. I've seen that down at the event, Danny Gabardon, which was there, was fantastic. They've been on ITV Wales recently promoting what they're doing as well. So if you're able to go to the GoFundMe via ColemanHadADream.com, please do that and support them. Their World Cup is coming up in September, I think, in Italy. So all the best with that. And we will absolutely hope to stay in touch with them. But congratulations for coming third in that tournament.
Yeah, folks are interested, they want the links, just go to our homepage and just scan down a touch and you'll see a podcast special with all of their information that you can click on.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Now, the Nations League is starting on Friday. Wales are playing Croatia and Kosovo, both at home. Stephen...
No, we're playing away to Kosovo.
Oh, sorry, away to Kosovo, Croatia at home. Croatia in Wrexham, is that right? That's right, isn't
That's
it?
That's right.
Yeah. Make sure I'm not getting muddled. Stephen Baker, who's one of our writers, has done a piece for us previewing the whole group, really. So please do head to ColemanHadADream.com and have a read of what Stephen has done there. Whilst we're talking about plugging things, before I finally get cracking and talking about the football, we'll do a bit of housekeeping. And please head to buymeacoffee.com/ColemanStream, where you can support this podcast. You can spend a few pounds, euros, dollars, wherever you're from, and all of that helps support what we're doing here. Everything that you donate kind of keeps us going and keeps us free. Equally, if you head to BagsyBags.com, you can use the code CHAD10 to get 10% off, and we get a little cut of that, which again goes to helping keeping this podcast free. Now, having teased it three times, I'm actually going to talk about the games. We do have Croatia and Kosovo. Looking at these two games, Ruth, if we just look at the general stuff for a moment before we look at the squad, what do you see as the big things you're looking for from the new manager in particular?
Bit more front-footedness, blooding some of the youngsters. For example, I was very pleased to see that there were two girls from the FA Wales academies included in the squad. I mean, they're not even with professional clubs yet, but and I think that's great for the girls that are involved in the North and South academies to see that there's opportunities to get into the first team. Obviously, there are age group things that they're accessing as well. But yeah, I just want to see us a bit more front-footed and a bit more willing to take risk. It's not quite so dependent on the starting 11. I think it's, you know, it's very evident that as an international team, you have to be resourceful. You have to be using your resources well. I think by the end of Granger's tenure, we all felt a bit frustrated from the limited nature of the players she was using. So I'm hoping to see some growth in that area.
Yeah, I'd say so. For me, I'm interested to see if we stick with the five at the back in order to kind of change that front-footedness and whether that continues as well.
You say that we sort of played five in the Ireland game, and I still think we were very attacking minded. I thought that was a good. I mean, I think a sort of a cross midfield that has Fishlock, James, Ingle, and Rowe in it is very strong. So, I'd be surprised if we don't have the five at the back, but I think we can use Woodham and Roberts in particular in quite an attacking way coming from the back in those sort of slightly wing-back positions. So that's I imagine how we'll set up, and as I said, not too different from how we played against the Irish.
I wonder, the reason I say I'm more looking at that is because I think if we're, you know, we've talked very often about having a plan B for this side, and how we set up is important to do that. And I wonder if this Nations League, maybe not the Croatia game, but certainly against Kosovo, where we can look at experimenting a little bit in some of those games. Yeah. And I guess that's what I mean when I say that, because I think we do need to have that variety. I think some teams we do need to be more front-footed and play four, and we also need to learn how to play the five and be front-footed. I would say, to be fair, in that Ireland game, I would say we actually more played with a natural three and two and two wingers as much as anything else, rather than a full five. So I'm intrigued to see how that evolves, I guess. The big miss, if you like, from the squad is Carrie Jones is unavailable due to injury, as is Safia Middleton-Patel. But as you referenced there, Ruth, Wilkinson has brought in five people for the first full senior camp. Sophia Kelly, Maisie Davis, Elena Cole, Mara Griffiths and Ania Denham. So again, it's, as you mentioned there, it's great to see these younger players getting their chance to be in and around the squad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I think the cost of a game in particular obviously provides some opportunities to, as you said, to play some play something a bit different. I mean, they're relatively new to playing international football. They've had some good wins recently. I think they're on a 5-game winning streak. And I think that's what Steve and the covered in his blog post as well. And they, but those have been against other teams down in the sort of 80 to 120 range ranking. They're 90 something at the minute. So that kind of throws you off a little bit, the fact that they're on such a winning streak. But I think that's definitely a game where we could look to experiment and perhaps play two quite different scenarios for the two halves, or quite different team lineups and that sort of thing. If hopefully we've, you know, taken charge in the first half and then have the scope to be a bit more experimental in the second. But it's two games we want to take 6 points from, so I think we've got to be mindful of that as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we've talked to you before that Ukraine are definitely our big target, if you like, in this group. So we've got to make sure that I think we've got to look to take 6 points from every doubleheader, and then, I mean, still really should be looking from at least 4 points from Ukraine, really, and try and top this group, which gets us promoted, but also gets us a seeded spot back into the playoffs for the Euros. I'll go through the format briefly in a moment, but I just wanted to reference one more thing, talking about the squad. If Jess Fishlock plays both games, that means that against Kosovo, she will play her 150th game for Wales. That is absolutely remarkable.
It's astounding, isn't it, when you add it up? You consider, until recently, there's been much fewer games per season than there was in the men's format initially. They've sort of caught up now. But yeah, it's astounding. And I think it so much shows her dedication when you just consider, I mean, I know how far it is from here to Cardiff. It's a long old trip for, you know, a nasty wet friendly in January that she's had to do on occasion and things like that. So yeah, very, very grateful for her dedication.
Absolutely. I mean, you think that she made her debut for Wales in 2006, by my best research, and the fact that she's come through and participated in so many different important games for Wales is remarkable, really. So the fact that she's now at 150 is bonkers is the word I wrote in my notes, and I stick by that. So hopefully we'll be saying congratulations to Jess on is it Tuesday next week, for what is a remarkable achievement. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing her play her 150th game, which is mad. Let's look at the games themselves a little bit, Ruth. We're playing Croatia on Friday. I think this is definitely the hardest matchup, I think, of the two games. They're 59th in the world, and they won 5 games last year, all against teams ranked higher than them in the world, which I thought was really interesting. They did suffer defeat to Norway in the Nations League promotion playoffs, which is, I can't even be bothered to explain how the promotion and relegation in that worked, but they lost to them. They lost 5-0 and 3-0 in what was Gemma Granger's first two matches in charge. So perhaps she can give us a few tips on how to beat them, Ruth.
Well, you'd hope so, but you never know. I think, I mean, I'm hoping the fact that we're starting at home, decent crowd at the race course, the girls up for the competition, being a better team than Croatia, means we can get off on a good start for this. It should be a winnable home game, although I think we're going to have to work at it. It's not going to be a easy game by any means. And they lost those games to Norway, as you said, but that's a different class of team. They've been competing well against the teams ranked higher than them, but, you know, within sort of shooting distance, as it were. They've been playing well, and I think they might see us in that light going into this game.
Yeah, I would agree with you. So for the for those of us who don't have a rocket science degree, I will try my best to explain the format. Basically, if you come first in the group of four, you get promoted to League A, and you're guaranteed a seeded place in the playoffs. If you come second in our group, you don't get promoted. You might be involved in the promotion playoffs, which happen at some unknown mystical time, to go into League A. And you're almost guaranteed a place, a seeded place in the playoffs. If we come third in the group, we're guaranteed a non-seeded place in the... No, sorry, we're not guaranteed. We're very likely to have a non-seeded place in the playoffs. if we come fourth, God forbid we get relegated and we are not in the playoffs. So in short, we can only get into the playoffs at this stage. We want to be winning the group so we can go back to League A. I think that's important for us and our development. It also guarantees us a seeded place in the playoffs, so we avoid any team who doesn't make it from the top ranked group. Yeah. So using Norway as the example, they came third in their group, which is why they were in that relegation playoff. Were that to happen again, they would come into our playoffs, but we wouldn't play a team like Norway from League A because they came third in their group. So that, I hope I've explained well, almost certainly not. But if you go to Wikipedia, there's a relatively helpful page there where that will explain it for you.
I think long story short is the better we finish in the group, the better our chances in the playoffs. And the playoffs is the only route we have open to us at the minute.
As always, ladies and gents, Ruth does this better than me. No surprise, no surprise to any of our regular listeners. To look back at Croatia, Ruth, they're quite inexperienced in the squad, especially in midfield and attack, although they have a lot of experience in defence. Nevrkala, I think I've tried to say, is her name. With that being said, they have conceded 21 goals in their last 10 games. So I would say that experience is perhaps not counting for loads right now.
Yeah, but a lot of those will be that the eight that they lost to the Norwegians won't it? They have Ivana Rudulec, who plays for Bayern, who's probably their best forward player. She's you know, been around for years and years and years. She's kind of their fish luck in that sense. They're a team that are kind of. They remind me of us maybe 5 or 6 years ago, where we had, you know, maybe three very good playing at a high level players, and then a sort of smattering of more national league level, you know, national league of Croatia level players. And we were at a point, and then we've advanced from there. And I think they're catching us up quick, looking at how they've been playing. So I think we've just got to be careful. Just very careful in this game. We don't have to win 3-0. You know, we just want to make sure we get those 3 points.
Agree. I was going to mention Rudulec. I wanted you to hopefully say her name first. She's actually left Bayern now. She's gone to Basel and is playing the Swiss League. But she scored 9 goals in 14 games this year, which is why I wanted to reference that. So she's doing pretty well, I would say. So she's definitely the one to watch out for, and has definitely had an experienced career in terms of what she's achieved. But she's the main threat there, I would say. Do we dare do a prediction here, Ruth?
I'll go 2-0 for us.
Okay, lovely. I was going to go 2-0 as well. I feel like we're doing this very often these days. So I'll go 3-0 just to be different. Okay, very good. Kosovo are an interesting side. They're 91st in the world and only played their first ever game in 2017, which is remarkable, really. As you mentioned earlier, they're on a great run. They've won every game they've played bar one since 2023. But they're all against lower-ranked teams for the most part in Lake Nations League C, which they got promoted from. And they also won the Turkish Women's Cup, competing against Estonia, Hong Kong and India. Definitely a team we should be beating if we have any kind of hopes of getting to the Euro 2025.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a good combination of a home game and an away game. You don't have to come back from that long trip to Kosovo and worry about playing another game. That the order of the games has helped us in this window. They're clearly got momentum. You know, they were promoted easily from their group, their League C group. As you said, and we've discussed, they're on a good run of wins, admittedly around teams that are of their ilk, but that's the nature of the Nations League. That's what it's there for. It's to help you build and gain momentum. So they will be looking to really make sure that they're not finishing in fourth in this group. They're going to work. Like, I think they'll be concentrating on make sure they're not beaten and eking out a few draws and hoping that that's enough to piece them into third place rather than fourth.
Yeah, I agree. And they've definitely got some players who are, you know, capable of being a threat. They've got Memeti, who's the captain. She plays for Hoffenheim, who are in the women's Bundesliga in Germany. She's only 24 as well. 28, sorry. No, 24, sorry. And they have got Temaj, I think is how you say it, who's a young, exciting player who plays at the back. She plays in the Bundesliga for Stuttgart. This will only be her, well, by the time it gets to us, third game. But she's definitely one for the future, I think, that is someone that they can build their team around. So they have a lot of interest in young players. They also have someone who plays for the Mackhams women's team as well. So I can only imagine that she'll be absolutely dreadful at football. They won 4. No, they lost 4-0 today. Absolute lols. The men's team, sorry, rather than the women's team. Anyway, by the by. I think, you know, we do have to be a bit careful, and we always... You know, these sort of away trips, whilst they're a lower ranked team, I would say historically it's never our strong point, men or women. So I think it's important we take this game seriously and make sure we kind of commit to it, to make sure that we give ourselves the best chance of winning.
Agreed. And I think I might go for a 2-0 in this as well, but perhaps with a slightly more experimental team, certainly in the second half. Maybe we take charge in the first, have a couple of goals by half time, and then are able to be a little more adventurous in the second half. But as you say, the 3 points is much, much more important than anything else.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 3-1 here. I kind of fancy them to score. I think especially at home, that'll give them a boost. And we've, you know, got to be wary of the fact that they haven't lost for 18 months, regardless of the opposition. That's something to be wary of. So I'm going to go 3-1, and I still think we will win that game. Speaking of winning, Ruth, I think it would be remiss of us not to recognise the under-17s have qualified for the elite round of their Euros as well, and whilst the under-21s are also top of their group as well. So whilst the men's team fell at the final hurdle, it's positive to see our youth teams doing well. And I saw one of the players in that age group, or maybe the under-16s, actually just signed for Man City this week as part of their young player academy program. So again, some positivity coming through. Okay, well there you go, ladies and gents. I think that is us for today. We've obviously talked about some miserable stuff, but there is some great stuff to look forward to. So good luck to the women's team on Friday and Tuesday next week. Hopefully Jess Fishlock gets her 150th cap. Thank you very much for your time, Ruth, and this feels healing in some way.
It does feel a little cathartic. Yeah, it's nice to actually be talking about positive things as well. I mean, the age group stuff is very positive, the women's situation is positive. Good, you know, it's another week with international football, which is never a bad thing, really.
Exactly. I'm just going to go and pour myself a massive pint of Guinness in the house, I think. Okay, well, there you are, ladies and gents. Thank you very much for listening. Please go to colmanhadadream.com to read Stephen's match preview for the women's game. You can also find information on the Welsh transplant team there as well. Go to buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream to support us. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your time, Ruth. We'll be back very, very soon. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.